Hello and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Each week, Inside Education brings you the best from the world of education from an Irish perspective. My name is Sean Delaney and you can listen to or download hundreds of podcasts of previous editions of Inside Education from seandelaney.com/podcasts. Later on this week's programme, I'll be speaking to Pam Grossman and David Berliner. But first, I'll bring you the second part of my interview with Dr. Marco Snook from the Netherlands. Marco Snook is an expert on teacher education and has written a book titled Developing Teacher Leadership and Its Impact in Schools. He is lecturer or professor of applied research at the Amsterdam Institute of Education. On last week's programme, he told us how his studies in physics influenced his work as a teacher educator, about problems with the structure of the profession of teaching, and about how research and practice can work better together in the teaching profession. He has also written about boundary crossing between universities and schools. In this part of our conversation, I began by asking Marco Snook what he meant by boundary crossing in that context.
For me, it is on different levels. Boundary crossing is about two different worlds which have different concerns and different expectations. And that can be the world of the school and the world of the university. I came across the problem of boundary crossing within my work on post-initial master programs, because we were supporting teachers to develop their leadership, to develop their leadership competences, to develop a new mindset, and then they came to schools. So those teachers who were teaching in school, went to university, were changed, came back into the school, which was not changed. That's a recipe for problems. And if we expect that individual teacher to change his school, I think we're overestimating what such an individual teacher can do. So I started to understand that process in terms of two different systems with different concerns, different logics. And, well, if they did not connect and we just expect that individual teacher to make that connection, that will not work. So we need to create a connection between these two different worlds of the school and the university in what I call from the literature boundary objects. So an activity where schools and university work together, not only through the students, but also to, for example, the school leader in the school and the teacher educator from the university. So to bring together those different perspectives. For example, in a thesis research during the master program, that's an opportunity to create such a boundary object. But it also would imply that research is not a negotiation between the master teacher and the teacher educator, but also that the school leader is involved in that process. Because if you don't create that connection, then still a teacher has to negotiate between his school leader and the teacher educator. So that's one way of understanding boundaries. Another is that within schools, actually the same thing happens. At least what I'm not sure, again, how it works in Ireland. But in the Netherlands, schools are mostly part of larger structures with a kind of CEO on top. So the formal school leader. And there is a very strong disconnection between teachers who are working with pupils and the school board, because the concerns of both groups are different. The concerns of a school leader and the school board is about the whole. It's about the sustainability. It's about the recognition they have to give to the inspectorate, for example, and the accountability that they're on. And they're looking at the whole, all of the pupils, etc. A teacher is concerned with just one pupil. And how can I motivate this pupil? How can I avoid that he will be a dropout, etc.? He's not concerned with the mean number of exam results on the whole level. He's looking at this. So the concerns are different. It's not the case that one concern is more important than the other, but they're different and they use different languages. So because of that tension, the risk is that there is a misunderstanding from both levels, from the board towards teachers and from teachers toward the boards. It's a we and them understanding of each other. So again, if you want to make a connection between these two different worlds, you need to create boundary crossers, boundary objects, which can try to make a connection. And in my understanding, and that's something I saw within the programs I was involved, is that those teacher leaders who we've been trying to educate in our post-initial master programs, could act as boundary crossers, trying to create a connection between the concerns of the board and the concerns of teachers, and to be some kind of liaison between the two. And sometimes people just started to organize conferences within their school where teachers are asked to contribute, or where the members of the school boards were asked to contribute, and when people met each other. And I think these kind of boundary activities were different groups, different worlds meet, I think are very important in education.
And if we go back for a moment to the boundary between the school and the university, where do you think the impetus should come to start dissolving that boundary?
It can be from both, and actually it doesn't matter where it comes from, as long as it comes. So it can be the university, because...
But if you say it doesn't matter, then nobody does anything about it.
No, I think it only works when two partners see the importance. And then the question is, well, who initiated? Well, I think it's a responsibility of both. It's a responsibility for schools to understand that their teachers need to go on in an ongoing process of professional development, and they can't do it on their own. They need the expertise of universities. So that's their concern, and I think it's the concern of university to see that their graduates come into schools will have problems and they're not finished with professional development. So they should take a role in supporting their alumni in the schools. So that's their concern. So I think from both perspectives, if we take into account what is happening with teachers in schools and what can we do, either from the perspective of a school board or the perspective of a university, to support them, I think that's the starting point.
I heard you speak a number of years ago about the whole area of competence-based teacher education. And you've touched on it as well today. You talked about, you know, the need for maybe different competence levels at different stages of a teacher's career. Where does the work that you've done and the thinking you've done on that competence-based teacher education, where does that stand now?
I do have a problem with the word competence-based teacher education, and that's, I do believe in competence-based teacher education, but the understanding of the word of competence is so different in different contexts, and especially it's a word from the Anglo-Saxon context. And if we use the word competencies in the Netherlands, in our Dutch language, we have an understanding of it, but that's a different understanding than is used in England, for example. So there are allergic reactions from teacher educators in England, maybe also in Ireland, towards the word of competence-based, because in England it's reduced to skills-based teacher education. We don't understand the meaning of our word competencies as skills-based. It is a combination of attitudes, skills, and knowledge who need to come together to support the work of teachers and the daily practice of teachers. Because of that, I'm very careful in using the word competence-based teacher education within an English context. In the Netherlands, it's much easier. So my understanding of teacher education and the teaching profession is that it asks for a connection between knowledge about teaching and learning, influenced and grown based on outcomes of research, concepts, models, etc. It's based on experience of teachers, which can develop themselves, and it's based on attitudes of teachers. And I think connected to that attitude, I think the key discussion that teachers need to have is to, what are we teaching for? So what is the underlying aims? What are our ambitions? What do we want to reach? And if you don't have that discussion, then the risk is that you become very instrumental. And I think what I see in the Netherlands at this moment is a very strong discussion, which is very much inspired by the work of Gert Biesta.
Who is that?
Gert Biesta. He is a philosopher and a sociologist on education. He's originally Dutch. He's worked in Stirling, I think, in Scotland. He's worked in Luxembourg. He's working now in, I think, a university in London. I'm not sure which one. He very much stresses the question, okay, what are we teaching for? and actually said, well, there are three key domains in education. The first one is we need to qualify people. So in terms of qualification, it's about people need to develop certain skills, and if they can show they have these skills, they get a qualification, so everybody knows and can I recognize, okay, if you've got this qualification, then this is the knowledge and skills you have. So that's one thing. The second thing is that it's about socialization. So it's becoming part of a community, feeling connected to a community, and that community can be the country, but it can also be the school, or it can be a local neighborhood. But teacher education need to focus also on socialization. And the third one is about subjectification. So it's about becoming a person, understanding who you are, what your mission, your personal mission is. And that's also a task for education. And his main point is that within educational systems, in Europe, in the world, we've been focusing too much only on qualification, because socialization and subjectification was too difficult. We don't know how to assess, etc. And we can have debates on what we actually want, but it's fuzzy, etc. So, and he actually claims that we need to redefine education in terms of these three key goals for education. And I think that's at the moment very much a discussion in the Netherlands, that teachers have taken up his thinking, not because he was so very original, but he was able to voice a feeling of uneasiness of many teachers in the Netherlands. So many teachers are now thinking about, okay, what is our role in the socialization of pupils? And that's not only about civic education. We need to teach them what the rules are in society. Now it's about connecting to society and feeling being part of it, but also then be able to criticize society, for example, and a part of subjectification. So to help pupils to identify who am I, what is my mission, what's my passion, etc. So I think that's the moment very much the discussion. And within teacher education in the Netherlands, we've been rethinking that, not only on the level of pupils in schools, but also on the level of what does it imply for teacher education? What do we do with our students? To what extent do we support student teachers in socialization? Becoming part of the profession of teachers, for example, but also what is our responsibility towards society? And it's about subjectification as a teacher. So what is my mission towards pupils, and what are my passions towards pupils? And the third level we've brought into the discussion is, what does it imply for teacher educators? So to what extent do we focus on qualification on teacher education? You started the question about what made you as a teacher educator, but it's also about socialization. To what extent do you as a teacher educator recognize yourself as being part of a professional community? So to what extent do Dutch teacher educators become member of that association for teacher educators? And it's about subjectification. So what kind of teacher educator do I want to be? What is my mission? What do I want to contribute?
You shied away from the word competency earlier. Would you be more comfortable with something like practice? Is that getting at the broader idea that you want?
No, practice is too vague for me. Practice is something you do. Competence is about what you need to be able to do that. So, well, we just had a keynote at the annual conference of the Association for Teacher Education in Europe, and there Pamela Grossman from the United States focused on core practices. And I think the question is that we need to, within every country, I think you need a discussion on how do we understand the teaching profession, and what do people need to be able to do the things a teacher needs to do. And I think that's the key question. That's not only knowledge, that's not only skills, that's not only attitudes, but it's the combination of these.
Okay. A number of years ago, there was a shortage of teachers in the Netherlands. Is that still the case, or has that been addressed at this stage?
It's something with various every now and again. We had an abundance of teachers who had difficulties in finding a job. I think last week I read the announcement that we will have a shortage of teachers within 10 years again. So everybody was ringing alarm bells and things like that. I think it moves up and down. I think the economic crisis made it easier for people to make a choice towards education, because it's a rather secure job. But well, I don't feel very secure in doing expectations about shortages of teachers.
What kind of a status has teaching got in the Netherlands?
It's mixed, I think. I think people recognize that teachers have a hard job, a tough job, and in that respect, they respect teachers who take that job of working with large group of pupils during a full day, hardly having any time to take a breath, etc. At the same time, because of that hard job, a lot of people don't think they really want to become a teacher because it's too difficult. And I think teachers in the Netherlands, but also probably in Ireland and other countries, have to focus with parents who become more and more educated at a higher level. So those parents expect to be seen as equal, to be part in the discussions about their pupils. So that gives teachers a hard job. And I think still there are some teachers who have difficulties of dealing with those parents or explaining why they think. And that also leads probably to the understanding of the general public, or those teachers don't know what they're doing. So, but I think that's, for me, very much the challenge of teachers, knowing that this is the case, you must be able to justify, to recognize the things you're doing, and to be willing to discuss that with parents and to see them as an equal partner, because you're working with their pupils. And it's not only your job, it's also their job. So I think one of the big problems in society is, I think, the market model, which is used everywhere, and that we tend to treat parents as customers. And I think that's killing for education. It will only work if we see them as partners working together to support pupils.
And how does that work in practice? Is that, I mean, do you expect parents to come into the classroom, for example, to help a teacher doing certain tasks, or how far would you go with that idea of parents as partners?
No, I think if you get in parents in schools to support, to take over activities during the classroom, they have a much wider role, not only for their own pupil, and that will disrupt, I think, a lot of things. But if you think about making a plan for one pupil, so how can I help this pupil to develop, then you need to understand that things are happening at home. So whether it be mathematics or language, parents can take up activities within their home, within the home situation. But then they need to understand what could be done. A learning problem of a pupil is not only the problem of a teacher, but it's also a problem of the parents. And you need to discuss it, to think about what can be done within schools, but also what could be done at within the home situation. That understanding that the development of a pupil doesn't stop when he leaves school, but goes on at home, and that in those two contexts you can work on supporting pupils. But that, I think, and in that respect, seeing parents as partners, I think that's important.
We're coming near the end, Marco, so I just have a few general questions that I wanted to ask you. And the first one is, who or what inspires you?
Well, in a general way, if I look at my work, I feel inspired by a wide variety of people that I am able to work with. So I work with students. I work with colleagues, so students at initial teacher education, but also in post-initial master programs. I work with teachers who are working in schools and are joining in research projects. I work with school leaders. I work with teacher educators. I work with policymakers, both on the national level and the European level. And I think all those different perspectives are very inspiring. So the variation of people who are very different, but at the same time are all devoted to one thing, and that's to improve education. I think that's for me is the inspiring part.
And is there an experience from your own primary or post-primary education that informs your practice in education today?
I mentioned that I studied physics and decided to take up my major on physics didactics. And actually, there was not a research group on that area. There was just one person who was being the research group. So actually, we worked together. I as a student, and he as an associate professor in within the institution. And in that context, there was a very equal relation between. So he wrote articles and then sent them to me and to ask, so what do you think, and can you comment on it? And I did the same. And I think that equal perspective on each other roles and taking each other seriously, I think that has inspired me very much in thinking about whether you work with pupils or students or colleagues, but to see each other as equals who can inspire me, but who also I can inspire. I think that's very much inspired me.
Have you ever regretted not going down the physics route?
No. Well, I've been down the physics routes in education. So I've been a physics teacher educator, but now that's long gone. So now I have a daughter who studies electrotechnology. So sometimes I can use my physics knowledge to support her. But it's fun now.
And that was Marco Snook having no regrets about being a teacher educator. I spoke to Marco at the annual conference of the Association for Teacher Education in Europe. A keynote speaker at the conference was Pam Grossman from the University of Pennsylvania. I already brought you part of my interview with Pam on a programme broadcast at the end of November, but I have an extra clip to bring you today in which I put to her some questions I also put to Marco, including asking her to tell me who or what inspires her.
I'm always inspired by great teachers. And I'm also inspired by the pre-service teachers that I've taught over these years. Every year, when I think about how difficult a job teaching is and how badly it's treated in the press, and then when I think of the people who come into my classroom who are so enthusiastic, so eager to make a difference, so hardworking. I'm inspired by them. And I'm also inspired by the teachers. I just was working with a group of teachers who work in project-based learning schools. And we got together to try to define some of the core practices for project-based learning. And, you know, they'd been teaching for 10, 15 years, so engaged in the work, so always working, always learning, always supporting one another and their colleagues. I find that very inspiring.
Have you a favorite blog or book or writer about education?
Boy, there's so many. I guess I don't know that I have a particular favorite. I think we're in a particularly good time right now around educational journalism because there are so many people who are both professional journalists who are writing well. So somebody like Elizabeth Green, who wrote Building a Better Teacher. So I think there are, you know, very, very good journalistic accounts of teaching right now in a way that we just didn't have them before. So I think that's very inspiring. But now we have so many teachers who are blogging and so many things to read about teaching. So I think it's at a time where it's almost too much.
If you could make one change to your current school, which is the Graduate School of Education at the University of Penn, and if resources or capacity were not an issue, what change would you make?
One of the biggest changes I'd make regarding teacher education is I wish that we could provide a fellowship to every student who came to us to become a teacher. We're very expensive. I think we do a very good job of teacher education, but we're not accessible to so many people. When I asked my daughter why so many people are going into Teach for America rather than going into graduate schools of education, some of it comes down to the cost because they're very mindful of the debt that they would have to go into. So one change I would make is that for people who want to teach in urban settings, who want to go on and make a commitment to teaching in Philadelphia, for example, that we could offer free tuition. Now, I know in other settings that's not revolutionary, but in the U.S. setting, that's pretty revolutionary. Yeah.
Is there an experience from your own primary or post-primary education that informs your practice in education today?
So I always talk about the teacher who inspired me. So my high school English teacher was the reason I became a high school English teacher. And when I think about my practice as a leader, it's so much based in teaching. I think of everything I do in terms of leading faculty meetings. I plan for them like I plan for a lesson. I mean, as a matter of fact, one time I called the agenda a lesson plan. So much of my work as a dean now, I think, is rooted in my work as a teacher. And so I still go back to my high school English teacher who really inspired me by having very high expectations for all of us, but also being incredibly supportive in helping us get there. So she's still my inspiration, Anne Wallach.
And that was Pam Grossman demonstrating that as teachers, we just never know how far our work may reach. Finally, I want to bring you a short clip from my interview with David Berliner. Most of my discussion with David was broadcast last October. In addition to those programmes, I asked David Berliner what he made of attempts by teachers to develop children's self-esteem. This was his response.
Life is hard. Life is complex. Building self-esteem is a good thing to keep in mind. How do I help this kid feel good about themselves? But it can be taken overboard by giving everyone an A, for example. That's nonsense. We live in a society in which you are ranked and rated, and you have to do some of that. But it can be done in a gentle way, and you don't have to tell a child they're a failure in life because they failed the test. But if they failed the test, you also have to give that as feedback to them. Here's you failed this. Here's why you failed it. If you'd like to do better next time, I'll help you. That's a different way of looking at it.
Have we overemphasized self-esteem and maybe not emphasized enough the development of resilience?
Both of those concepts are so vague to me. I don't know what to make of them. It's hard to say you can overemphasize building self-esteem in people. That's what parents try to do. That's what teachers try to do. How is that wrong? I suppose it can go wrong, but I'm not sure. And then building resilience, who can be against building resilience? These are words, none of us know what to do. I wanted my children to be resilient. What did I do for that? I haven't got a clue. They seem to be resilient kids. These are terms that are hard to instantiate in behaviors in a classroom.
And that was David Berliner speaking to me about self-esteem and bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. I want to thank this week's guests, David Berliner, Pam Grossman and Marco Snook, for their time. Remember, you can listen to or download podcasts of this and all previous Inside Education programmes from insideed.com. You can get in touch with me by emailing feedback or suggestions to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.